This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We know for a fact that our community will make a difference in the battleground states. And I think Democratic Party leaders are paying attention and they are afraid of what's happening. And they're sending messages to the White House that this is going to hurt our chances in 2024.
That's Basim El-Khara of the U.S. National Muslim Democratic Council on the prospect of American Muslims withholding their support for President Joe Biden's re-election campaign next year due to his support for Israel. Details coming up. Also, the U.S. president faces anger in his party because of the support for Israel. And in Kenya, Britain's King Charles III has expressed regret for colonial-era abuses. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Today, Britain's King Charles met Kenyan artists and explored the local art exhibits during his state visit. Earlier in the morning, Charles and Queen Consort Camilla visited a cemetery for veterans of World War II. Charles' visit, his first as monarch to a former colony, comes at a time when Britain is under pressure to do more to recognize colonial-era abuses. Last night at a state dinner, he expressed regret but did not apologize for colonial-era abuses. We have VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo on the line now from our bureau to tell us about the King's visit. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Mariama.
Thank you very much, Yehais, for having me.
So, first, tell us more about King Charles and the Queen Consort Camilla's activities today.
Well, today, the King and the Queen Camilla basically started the day by honoring veterans at the Commonwealth War Graves Commission Cemetery. They joined British and Kenyan military personnel in basically an act of remembrance. So they were there at a cemetery located at Kiriokor. While they're there, actually, they tried there was a minute of silence, and then they both made a wreath basically to honor these veterans. And while they were there, actually, there were a few veterans who are still living, including two of them, ages 104 and 104 and 117 years old. So those veterans were actually there to receive medals that some of them lost for whatever reason. And the King was there to replace those medals today. So after that, they actually headed to many different places. They went to the UN, but another place they went to was Karura Forest, which is an urban forest basically in the heart of the city of Nairobi. It was to highlight the role of green spaces in cities. And you are not going to believe who joined him. No other than famous Kenyan marathon runner, Eliud Kipchoge. Okay. So Kipchoge was there as one of the people to help flag off a race. He was also there because he did a forest walk with Wangari Maathai's daughter, who accompanied him. But another highlight of the Karura Forest thing was that he got a help from a 10-year-old girl who had written to Buckingham Palace, basically asking the King if he could plant a tree with her, and the King agreed, and there she was. So she was there as well at Karura Forest today with the King.
So, Mariama, Britain's tarnished colonial past is taking center stage in Kenya this week. And as you well know, many citizens of former British colonies, including leaders of Kenya's Nandi people, want Charles to go further by directly apologizing and endorsing reparations for colonial-era abuses, including torture, killings, and widespread expropriation of land, much of which remains in British hands. So how was that message by the King accepted over there in his speech yesterday?
I think you said it well, and the feeling I've been hearing and the feeling I've been seeing the past few days have been mixed. I think, like President Ruto said, it is a first step, and people like him, people respect King Charles for at least acknowledging some of those atrocities and some of the wrongdoings that were done during colonialism. But at the same time, you have many, many others. There are lots of organizations, activists, and just, you know, I think I mentioned in one of my pieces yesterday about the Kenyan Human Rights Commission, who had actually sent a 10-page letter to the UK High Commissioner here in Nairobi, basically, you know, asking for answers, asking, basically making the cases for reparations, for acknowledgement, and an apology. So you have a mixed bag of, you know, some people do say that maybe it's time to move on. They didn't want, you know, some of these issues to overshadow the visit, the King's visit here. But at the same time, you've had activists who have tried to even do protests, who have not been able to do so because, you know, the police have basically tried to disperse and things like that. So it's a mixed bag, certainly. Many people, I think, as President Ruto said, it's a first step for him to come and acknowledge and kind of accept what was happening during colonialism. But the other issue that people don't talk about, I think a few activists that I spoke to talk about wrongdoings during colonialism, but they also talk about post-colonial times. There are so many things that have been happening and, you know, allegedly happening, obviously. You know, and they have been accusing Britain of committing those actions. I guess only time would tell at this point.
VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo briefing us on the King Charles and the Queen Consort's visit to Kenya. Thank you for your input.
Thank you very much for having me.
Today, more than 100 injured people and foreign nationals entered Egypt today from the Gaza through the Rafah crossing. Egypt has agreed to accept some injured Gazaans into the country for health care and is working with foreign governments to get their citizens and their families out of Gaza. Also today, the Associated Press reported Israeli airstrikes hit apartment buildings in the Jabalaya refugee camp near Gaza City for a second day in a row. The Hamas-run government says the strikes today caused many deaths and injuries, but there is no independent verification. The toll from Wednesday's strike was not immediately known, but some news media say hundreds were hurt or killed. The Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry says close to 9,000 Gaza residents have died since fighting began on October 7th when Hamas militants attacked several Israeli communities. Israel says more than 1,400 Israelis died in that initial attack, most of them civilians. Israel says its strike at the Jabalaya camp targeted and killed a top Hamas commander, while Hamas strongly denied the commander was there. To brief us on the latest, we have reporter Linda Gradstein standing by in Jerusalem. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Linda.
Thank you.
So what is the latest from where you are?
Well, you know, as you said, Hamas says that Israel hit the hit Jabalia refugee camp for the second day in a row. Now, this refugee camp is in northern Gaza, which is the area that Israel had told civilians to flee from, and yet tens of thousands did not leave northern Gaza, either because they couldn't or because they had nowhere to go or because they believed Hamas when Hamas told them to stay. And, you know, this refugee camp is very densely populated. The buildings are not that strong. So if you're talking about an Israeli airstrike with a large bomb, you know, as you said, the death toll, we don't really know, but it seems likely that it is, you know, dozens killed, if not more than that. Just in general, I was speaking to somebody from Gaza earlier today, and they say there are perhaps thousands of bodies underneath the rubble that are not part of the death toll. So we're actually going to, whenever this ends, I think the death toll is going to be even higher than we thought.
Much higher, yes. So for the first time since the conflict began, Linda, under a Qatari-mediated deal, I think, injured Palestinians have begun arriving in Egypt through the Rafah border crossing. Anything on that front?
Yeah, it's not very many. I mean, I think it's a total of 90 today. Egypt also, for the first time, said that foreign nationals who had been stuck in Gaza since the fighting began and dual passport holders could leave Egypt. And so by the end of the day, an estimated 400 have left and have gone to Egypt. Egypt is also building a field hospital near the Rafah border crossing. If you cross from Rafah, it's about a seven-hour drive to Cairo through the Sinai. So, Egypt is now trying to help some injured Gazans, but Egypt is also very concerned about a wave of tens of thousands of refugees from Gaza who want to leave, who really have been trying to, get out of the fighting, of sort of them going across the border and trying to go to Egypt. So Egypt is being very careful about this.
And lastly, Linda, there have been multiple, UN agencies, the United States and other countries are asking for a humanitarian ceasefire. Israel heed that request?
Well, I mean, there's sort of two different things. One is a temporary pause in the fighting, which perhaps Israel might heed. But in terms of a ceasefire, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that a ceasefire would be tantamount to allowing Hamas to win, that if Israel stops now when Hamas still has military power, Hamas still is able to fire rockets and on Israel, as we saw earlier today, that, it's only a matter of time before Hamas carries out another attack. So it seems that Israel is pretty much committed to getting rid of Hamas. I mean, what comes after that is another question. But I do not see Israel agreeing to a ceasefire, certainly without, or even a temporary ceasefire, as long as Hamas continues to hold some 240 hostages as well.
Reporter Linda Gradstein, standing by in Jerusalem, briefing us. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
President Joe Biden is facing a revolt from some members of his own Democratic Party over his unwavering support for Israel as that country expands ground operations in Gaza and Palestinian civilian casualties mount. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wida-Kusuwara has this report.
As Israeli airstrikes continue in Gaza, including this one on the Al-Shati refugee camp, an open letter to President Joe Biden from advocacy group the National Muslim Democratic Council, demanding that he broker a ceasefire by 5 p.m. Tuesday or face the consequence of millions of American Muslims withholding their support for his re-election next year. Council Chair Basim Al-Kara via Skype.
We know for a fact that our community will make a difference in the battleground states. And I think Democratic Party leaders are paying attention and they are afraid of what's happening. And they're sending messages to the White House that this is going to hurt our chances in 2024.
More than a million Muslim voters cast a ballot in the 2020 election, turning out in numbers large enough to potentially swing the presidential race in some battleground states. Muslim and Arab Americans traditionally vote for Democratic candidates, but a shift may be coming. A new poll by the Arab American Institute showed support for Biden dropped among Arab American voters from 59% in the 2020 election to 17% ahead of 2024. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
We're going to continue to engaging with the Muslim community, the Arab American community, and Palestinian American leaders to hear their concerns.
In contrast, Jewish Americans are deeply appreciative of Biden's support of Israel, said Hallie Soifer, who leads the Jewish Democratic Council of America via Skype.
Israel is an important issue, remains a very important issue to Jewish voters. It's an issue about which there's a very high emotional attachment between Jewish Americans and support of Israel.
About 7 million Jews live in the U.S., the same number as in Israel. They make up 3% of the U.S. electorate. Biden is also widely praised in Israel. He has been urging Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to conduct the war following international humanitarian law to protect civilians. Jonathan Reynolds, head of the Department of Political Studies at Bar-Ilan University via Skype.
What he's saying to Israel, to help me, to help you. If you give maximum effort to fight in the right way, according to the laws of war, then it makes it easier for me to support you and get support from you in the international community and at home in America and in the Democratic Party.
Polls show more Republicans than Democrats approve of Biden's decision to send weapons to Israel. Norman Ornstein, Senior Fellow Emeritus at the American Enterprise Institute via Skype.
I do think that there isn't a lot of room for Republicans here, whether it's Trump or the Republicans in Congress, to outflank Biden on support for Israel.
Meanwhile, there's growing pressure for a ceasefire, including from anti-war protesters during Tuesday's congressional hearing. Administration officials have advocated for humanitarian pauses to allow aid to reach civilians, but say a ceasefire at this point will only benefit Hamas. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Washington.
As Israel intensifies its military campaign in Gaza, some experts warn that a possible conflict scenario could have Israel reoccupying the Gaza Strip and becoming responsible for governing the Palestinian territory. President Joe Biden has warned it would be a mistake for Israel to reoccupy the territory, exposing Israeli troops to violent resistance. Wolfgang Porstai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, discussed this scenario with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shinawi.
I fully agree with President Biden. This is no serious option. Absolutely not. An occupation of Gaza would lead to a military, economic, and political disaster for Israel. A permanent occupation by Israel would just offer the remaining terrorists, and there will be some remaining even after a successful war from the point of view from Israel, they will just offer these people easy targets. And this would end for Israel in another war of attrition, like they had it in Gaza before the withdrawal and in the southern Lebanon. Furthermore, they would need to care for 2 million hostile Palestinians, and they would need to organize reconstruction efforts. All this would be also a heavy financial burden, and they would need to sustain a very large and very costly occupation force. And domestically and internationally, this would be a political disaster for any Israeli government, whoever is in charge of Israel after the war. And furthermore, Israel is right now, and even more after the war, in dire need of financial aid from the United States. And I don't think Washington would be ready to pay for an Israeli occupation of the Gaza Strip.
But Israel is now pushing for a transfer of Palestinians in Gaza to Sinai in Egypt.
I don't think that Egypt would be ready to accept refugees from the Gaza Strip for three reasons. The first one is the infrastructure in the northern Sinai Strip is simply not ready to host so many people. You know, the Sinai has about 600,000 inhabitants. They are simply not able to host, in addition, hundreds of thousands of more Palestinians. The second one is the Egyptian state would also not be able to organize the support for these refugees in the northern Sinai. And finally, you are aware that many of the terrorist organizations operating in Sinai, especially in northern Sinai, have their backward relationships and their backward support in the Gaza Strip. So the Egyptian security forces are certainly scared that if they let hundreds of thousands of refugees uncontrolled, more or less uncontrolled, into the northern Sinai, that quite a number of supporters of the local terrorist organizations would be among them. So I would rule out that Egypt is ready to accept this, and they can't be forced to do so by Israel.
Experts say Israel would seek to destroy Hamas, but refrain from getting involved with the messy business of governing Gaza. They warn that in this situation, the Strip could easily devolve into even further chaos and violent conflict, as different groups like Islamic Jihad will likely be even more extreme than Hamas, vying to fill the power vacuum caused by Hamas' absence.
I'm pretty sure that the Israelis will not attempt to govern Gaza, the Gaza Strip. They will depart from the Strip as soon as possible and return to Israel. But what could be a positive solution after the war? Maybe the temporary deployment of an international Arab peace or stabilization force to Gaza could be a way forward to replace Hamas and to replace the Israeli forces as a security force. I would say it would also make sense if the Palestinian National Authority of President Mahmoud Abbas could return to Gaza and replace the Hamas regime, establishing a new civilian government. But if Gaza should be seriously stabilized, huge investments by the international community will be required, by the Western Europeans, by the Americans, and by the rich Arab states. The people of Gaza need to see and need to feel that life is better for them without Hamas. And Israel, let me stress, will also need to change its attitude towards the Palestinians. They need to get the radical settlers under control who are harassing Arabs and burning down houses on the West Bank. This is not a way of cooperation, and this is not a way to get to a peaceful cooperation and coexistence with the Palestinians. They also need to give up their illegal West Bank settlements. So if they want to have peace in Israel, and I'm confident that after the war, there will be even more people who want to have lasting peace, it is now more clear than ever that an independent, stable and viable state of Palestine needs to be established. Like the Yom Kippur War led to the Camp David peace agreement, hopefully the Gaza War will lead to a peace between Israel and Palestine.
That was Wolfgang Poshtai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. In the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo, the humanitarian situation is worsening following the suspension of World Food Program activities in the camps for internally displaced people due to insecurity. Reporter Zanem Neti Zaidi visited the IDP camps and has this report.
These two men are building a small hut to shelter their family after spending about 2 days under the stars. They recently fled the Kibumba area in Nyiragongo territory, where heavy firing has been reported over the past few days between M23 rebels and the Congolese army. They lament the difficult life they have led since their arrival. Safari Karikumutima, a displaced person, says that he and his family do not have water, food, or medicine since they arrived. They don't know what to do. Even the hut he is building will not be comfortable. They are using canvas they have collected. Many of the newly displaced, like Safari, don't have that cannot find even dilapidated canvas to cover their huts. Some spend the night outside, and those who are lucky end up in unfinished houses around the camp, exposed to harsh weather. Maria Dusabe says they do not have covers to make huts. They sleep without food, and at night they are drenched by the rain. They sleep in this unfinished house. It's as if they were sleeping outside. The poor humanitarian situation has been exacerbated by the suspension of humanitarian intervention in camps of Nyiragongo territory by the World Food Program since Wednesday, October 25, due to high insecurity in the region. Gilbert, one of the leaders of the displaced people, says they have registered at least 1,250 new households from Kibumba, Rugari and Tongo who are facing a very critical humanitarian situation, and he fears deaths in the coming days due to the lack of assistance. He says the World Food Program used to play a very important role in assisting IDPs, but today it is no longer present, so he is afraid they will soon be burying a lot of people because of hunger and the lack of relief. North Kivu Province is home to some 2.4 million displaced persons, and in addition to insecurity, the World Food Program lacks the funds to carry out its activities. So far, nothing has been said about legal dates for the resumption of activities. For VOA Africa, I'm Zanem Neti Zaidi.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, David Greenberg, Thanks for choosing The Voice of America.